You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 22nd of July. Jerome Powell is doing a speech at 2:30 our time. Could be spicy, could be boring. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Kieran Whitten from Anchor. So we got all those bank results from the US pouring in. The good, the bad, the indifferent. We'll chat with him about those. Michael Hewson from Graphene Economics. Multinational businesses can navigate tariffs, but also the potential impacts on employment and tax revenue. And then Sean Kelly from Parity Wealth Managers. Why fund managers are in some cases reducing equity exposure, and where does that money go? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines: MoneyWeb, BRICS bloc slows down on de-dollarization. Member countries make no new decisions on launching their own currency at the recent summit in Brazil. Business Day, Sibanye-Stillwater acquires U.S. refinery for $82 million. Sibanye's U.S. presence makes it uniquely placed to weather the U.S.-SA trade storm. Morning markets, the U.S. was green, S&P up 0.1%, NASDAQ 0.5% higher. The East mostly green, Sydney the exception, down 0.2%, Tokyo up 0.2%, Hong Kong, a couple of points, 0.01% higher, and Tencent also 0.2% up. Commodities, mostly green. Gold futures, $3,404 an ounce. Brent is red, $68.67. Platinum, $1,497. And palladium, $1,305. The rand, $1,762. Bitcoin, $117,200. And top 40 opening call, 10 points to the red. I think we can call that going nowhere.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Kieran Whitten from Anchor. Kieran, always appreciate the early morning. Bank results coming out of the US last week. JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, a whole bunch of them coming through. What's your big takeaway from the numbers? Because it was, I mean, none of them were horrible, but it was some really good, some perhaps less so. Your thoughts?
Good morning, Simon. Good to be on the show again. And yeah, the U.S. bank earnings, obviously starting off the earnings season in the U.S. as always, and it does paint a solid picture of the overall health of the U.S. economy as well as consumer. And I think if you go back to the end of the first quarter results, the outlook for the banking industry looked very promising, and every management team was citing the deregulation to come as a big tailwind for the sector. Now we fast forward 3 months, and it's actually been the trading and global markets divisions that have been driving the strength in the sector, like trading revenue hitting a 14-year high for JP Morgan. And we've seen this trading revenue for both fixed income and equities really continuing to dominate investment banking, which is where everyone expected the big pickup for these Wall Street banks. And trading revenue has been dominating this for quite a while now. Policy uncertainty obviously not helping investment banking, and that's actually leading the same policy uncertainty leading to the market volatility we've seen, which has obviously been good for the trading divisions. But I think still looking out beyond these results, we do think that bank deregulation is going to be a theme, that is going to be a tailwind. And we know that that regulation in the U.S. is going to allow banks to cut back on their capital requirements. They've just done their stress tests, and we think a lot of bank capital is going to be unleashed, and this is going to result in quite a big increase in earnings per share and return on equity. And I think the market may be slightly underappreciating this, actually. So the banking industry, we think, is still a good place to remain invested in the U.S. It's performed very well. It has been firing on all cylinders, but maybe offsetting that, some slight tightening of financial conditions going forward in the next year. But like you've said, a whole range of them reporting, and some good, some not so good. I think JP Morgan still showing that it is pretty much the best in class there.
It absolutely is. I take your point. I mean, JP Morgan is I don't know, can we call it the beast out there? I mean, its market cap is, what, 2x Bank of America, which is the closest. You make a really good point there that, you know, when I think banks, and particularly in South Africa, yes, they've all got their commercial investment banking, but a lot of South African banking really is about just, you know, good old-fashioned, you know, net interest income. Yes, there's the non-interest income as well. But these US banks are so much more about the investment side, the trading side, and generating humongous profits from that.
Yeah, I mean, if you had to look at Jamie Dimon's JP Morgan, it can almost be split up into three or four businesses where you've got the consumer facing side of it could be the one. And I think you've touched on an interesting point there where, I mean, the US banking system obviously is the world leader, but South Africa itself has a very, very strong banking system. But it is interesting to just note the differences in how exposed they are to global markets, with I think the US sort of being obviously the center of capitalism, and a few of those banks, like the Goldman Sachs, the JP Morgans, really exposed to global finance. But then you've got the other ones, Wells Fargo, even Citigroup, more exposed to the consumer. And those ones, especially Wells Fargo, actually did struggle a bit being exposed more to that net interest income. And I think, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what does happen with net interest income going forward. But I think attention also now shifts a bit in the banking industry to European banks that are reporting.
Yeah.
Obviously, a lot of chatter about, are they going to deregulate there to compete with the American banks? And I think a lot of European banking leaders are calling for that.
Yeah, and that's an important point, that deregulation, as you say, frees up capital and it's going to make them significantly more profitable. Can Europe compete? We'll leave it there. That's Kieran Whitten, anchor. Always appreciate the early morning time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting with Michael Hewson, director at Graphene Economics. Michael, appreciate the time. It goes without saying, Trump's first August 30% tariffs are going to be significant for multinationals. They may or may not happen, but at this point, they are on track. My first question, are there specific sectors across South Africa, across the broader African continent, that are perhaps especially vulnerable to these tariffs?
Good morning, Simon, and good morning to your listeners. Yes, absolutely, and you're 100% right. These proposed tariffs could have a very significant impact on a number of companies, especially those manufacturing and producing in South Africa and selling into the US. Particular sectors of concern include mining, agriculture, and that automotive sector, but there are other sectors as well that could be badly impacted.
And the impact, I mean, obviously, there's going to be potentially a direct impact onto these companies. That flows through to two important parts of the economy, tax revenue and employment. Truthfully, something that we can't afford to put at risk either in the country or again back into the continent.
Perhaps if I break it up into two main groups of companies that we see being impacted by this. The first one, Simon, is companies that are producing and headquartered in South Africa, for example, and selling goods into the US. Now, those companies, they are facing a question of, well, what do they do? Because 30% tariffs on their goods will make them uncompetitive.
Yeah.
So what those companies are asking themselves is one of three questions. Can they reallocate their sales to other markets?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that isn't always possible because it takes a while to build up a client base in a particular country, to get traction, to get your products known about in a market. So it's not immediately always viable to suddenly reallocate to a different market. So that's the first question that they're asking themselves, if they can and should do that. The second question is, would they otherwise need to reduce production because there won't be the same demand into the US? That obviously means that there's impact on jobs, as you say, but also impact on profitability of the companies. And that's going to lead to a decrease in tax collections from those companies. The third option that, you know, some companies are exploring is saying, well, if the US is a long-term key market for them and they need to be competitive in terms of pricing into that market, do they need to absorb the tariffs in South Africa by offering lower prices into the US? That would mean, again, impact on profitability in South Africa. That will have an impact on tax collections. But it could also lead to scrutiny from a SARS perspective if SARS asks questions about why they are undercharging perhaps to a related party in the US compared to other markets. when in fact they're doing it for commercial reasons to try to maintain their market in the US. So that's the first broad category of companies that we're seeing grappling with this and some of the impacts. The second category is those companies that are in South Africa, but they are members of very large multinational groups, parts of global value chains. Now, very often, these very large multinationals, they'll have a number of production facilities across the world.
Yeah.
They decide at a central level where they're going to be producing the goods and allocating the production volumes. They typically do that based on a very carefully thought through business cases of which market makes the most sense for them to be producing the goods. Now, if the producer in South Africa, the manufacturing facility in South Africa, is now suddenly less competitive, those global multinationals could reallocate production to other producers within their group, again, impacting employment and profits and tax collections in South Africa.
And that reallocation, I hadn't thought of that because I'd thought, you know, maybe they're going to reshore. They'll go back to the US and produce US requirements in America, but they could just go to a country with a 10% tariff instead of the 30% tariff. The impact for us remains the same, but that might be an easier decision and process for them, particularly depending what it is that they're producing.
Completely correct. And if they already have facilities set up in other markets, we do see companies reallocating, and some of them have reallocated production, you know, to other factors. In the past, it was due to electricity security, for example, or other uncertainty, you know, policy uncertainty in South Africa, leading them to reallocate. So, you know, it's not a new concept. It's something that we have seen in prior years for different reasons.
Governments, obviously, and there was news out last week that the president is, we're engaging with the US to see what we can do about that 30%. But you mentioned SARS, and that, I hadn't thought of that. They're going to suddenly say, hang on, what's happening here with your pricing? Is there something that revenue authorities can do to try and mitigate?
Well, I think it's similar to during COVID, where, you know, companies were hit, you know, for various different factors and hit in various different ways. Some Mozambique, for example, did not have strict lockdown. South Africa did have strict lockdown. Botswana, you could also move freely, but Botswana companies in Botswana were impacted because they couldn't easily move their goods as easily through South Africa. So every country was impacted differently. And what was really important for revenue authorities was to look at companies on a case-by-case basis and understand why companies were impacted in a certain way and which company in a multinational organization should be incurring the risk associated with these tariffs. Is it the subsidiary or affiliate in the US? Is it the entity in South Africa? And properly understanding which entity should take the potential risk and impact for the Trump-related tariffs.
Yeah, and actually, I take your point and engage on it. It's a lot of effort, but it's one-on-one because they spoke at every level. We'll leave it there. It's Michael Houston, Director, Graphene Economics. Appreciate the time. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting this morning with Sean Kelly, Parity Wealth Managers. Sean, appreciate the time today. Fund managers reducing equity exposure. I suppose the top up, what are we talking? What's the sort of intro? What's happening here?
Yeah, thanks, Simon. Great to be on. And I think, you know, the fact is market volatility is nothing new, but it's certainly intensified this year. Between renewed tariff threats from President Trump and the broader backdrop of geopolitical uncertainty, investors are, I think, navigating a far more complex landscape than they were just 6 months ago. And in response to this, we are seeing a noticeable shift in institutional positioning, whereby fund managers aren't just trimming their equity exposure for short-term gains. They are actively de-risking their positions. You know, some of the research that we see, like from Bank of America, shows that net equity allocation is now at its lowest since October 2023. Well, on the other side, cash holdings have climbed to 5.3%, which is above the long-term norm of around 4.7%. So with equities, you know, sort of falling and cash rising, investors are starting to sort of ask the bigger questions and look at what's driving this cautious shift.
And you answered one of my questions there already, offshore or local. You mentioned the research report there. That's obviously offshore. Is there any evidence, even anecdotal, that we're seeing the same locally, or is this more a global phenomenon at this point?
I think it's definitely both, Simon. You know, I think, you know, one of the biggest things is that there is this bond equity disconnect, and that is a global trend. You know, one of the clearest tensions in the market right now is what can be described as a growth narrative mismatch. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, equity markets are pricing in renewed acceleration led by optimism like AI and fiscal stimulus and resilient corporate earnings. But on the other hand, bond markets are signaling the opposite. Bonds are signaling multiple interest rate cuts, you know, on the back of weaker growth expectations. And it's the divergence that's raising a red flag. You know, historically, when bonds and equities disagree this strongly, it's often the equity side of the equation that has to realign downwards. So fund managers are wary of this and are reducing equity to avoid being cut off, you know, being caught on the wrong side of an abrupt correction.
I take your point. I mean, when there's a war between bonds and equities, bonds wins. It also ties into, if we go back to, I don't know, late last year, beginning of this year, there was all the talk around the high valuations, most notably in the US and most notably in Mag 7, but certainly high valuations. I was at an Ashburton conference beginning of the year. They spoke around the best margins that US equities had ever seen. In other words, high valuations. And now 6 months later, we've got all the chaos that we've seen around tariffs and everything else. And markets are back at highs. And there's that massive disconnect between the two.
Yeah, I think there is, absolutely. And I mean, I suppose the higher valuations have just continued. You know, we've seen a significant concentration. The Mag 7 still making up 31% of the S&P, but the returns are still strong. The NASDAQ 100 up around 22% for the year versus the S&P 500 at 7.3%. And those valuation metrics, you know, are waving a red flag. The forward P for Mag 7 of around 35 versus the S&P for around 20. So, you know, again, I think the shift from equity is some managers are simply locking in gains and rotating into safer assets like cash and bonds.
And it is cash and bonds. I mean, those are your typical safe haven type of assets. And particularly if we look at in the US, and in fact, even in Europe, we've seen bond yields edging higher. So there is return to be had there, notwithstanding the sort of the safety.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's sort of a lot of fund managers are looking at is you're getting some very good yield in treasuries and you're taking half the risk. I think, you know, one thing to note, though, is the public sector and debt saving and the fiscal stimulus, you know, where we are globally looking at unprecedented levels of public debt saving, you know, in the US budget deficits of 6 to 7% of GDP, which is around $1.83 trillion, have become the new norm. And, you know, this trend is visible in China, Japan, Europe. So, you know, I suppose the fund managers are correctly questioning how long equity markets can continue climbing in the face of this. You know, if you think you can't completely ignore the long-term consequence of an imbalance.
And that is it. I mean, the outlook for this is, and you know, it's not that we're saying everything's going to collapse by the end of the week or the month or even necessarily this year, but there is a disconnect. And that outlook then is more money into the cash, near cash bonds, etc., and ultimately less into equity. There does at some point need to be a reckoning, even if it's a slow motion reckoning.
Yeah, absolutely, Simon. You know, I think, again, looking at recent reports, around 58% of fund managers expect global growth to slow over the next 12 months. But I think importantly, you know, a sign of a move out of equities isn't a sign of panic. It's tactical risk management tool in response to changing conditions. We've seen some very strong Q2 reports come in and good earnings. Mm-hmm. MSCI was up around 11.5%, NASDAQ around 18%. And our house view is still confident in the long-term themes like AI and energy transition. But in a world of fiscal imbalances and elevated real interest rates, you know, portfolio discipline is important. So for the prudent investor, it's following that logic and not necessarily fear, but foresight.
Foresight. I like that. And it goes to the point I made, which is the bonds, the cash, the near cash. You're getting some good numbers there to compensate for it. We'll leave it there. Sean Kelly, Parity Wealth Managers, appreciate the time.
And that's our poll today. Are you sort of tweaking your portfolio, perhaps reducing some equity exposure going into bonds? Certainly, I mean, the valuations are eye-watering and they were at the beginning of the year and they're now just higher. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
We live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6.30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Our poll yesterday, we were chatting with Gerrit Smit from Stonehage Fleming, Global Diversification Risks and Benefit. We asked if you thought your portfolio was well diversified. Over half said yes, it is greatly diversified. A third said no, it's overly concentrated. The rest said not sure at all. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nubuchle. Nicole's back. To you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. The business of whiskey.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.